is Nicole Whitney, News for the Soul, life-changing talk radio from the uplifting to the unexplained.
News for the Soul is now in its 25th year of broadcasting. Tune in live or visit the archives at newsforthesoul.com. That's newsforthesoul.com.
Next on News for the Soul, Your Spiritual Life with Raymond Posch.
Raymond is a life mastery coach, writer, speaker, and host of the Spirituality Beckoning podcast. His book, Awakening to Wholeness, is a record of his exploration into spirituality and his personal awakening. As an avid speaker, his mission is to share his knowledge and help others to awaken to oneness and to make a positive difference in the world. Let's welcome Raymond back to News for the Soul.
Welcome, audience, to another episode of Our Spiritual Life. And with me today, I have Dr. Allison J. Kay, and she is, among probably many other things, an energy healer, author, speaker, holistic life coach, master meditator, and wow, that's quite a list. And I know she does some incredible coaching work with her clients. So we'll dig into some of that or in touch on some of what she does. And I'm going to, of course, ask her to tell us all about herself in just a moment here. But one thing I noticed on one of your web pages, Allison, is you said that you are a master mind-body energy medicine practitioner for more than 20 years. So that is, you know, I find that fascinating and full of all kinds of potential of what that means for us and for the audience today. So again, welcome. I'm so happy to have you.
I'm happy to be here with you, Ray. I'm looking forward to seeing where we go today.
Yes. So, Allison, or Dr. Allison, I might exchange and call you either today, but go ahead and tell the audience and me included a bit about yourself and, kind of provide some context for what this conversation is going to be about.
Well, I guess I never settle, and I guess I'm very adventurous, and I started as a political organizer and had a lot of success in that field and getting people elected who would write legislation to protect the environment. And this is in the early 90s. And I ended up having so much success that I was put in really intense races within California State for both the federal level and the California State level Congress, so to speak. It's called the Assembly, as for those of you who don't know. And so, I learned to meditate. I was walking through a bookstore in San Francisco where I was living, and a book literally, it felt like it leapt off the shelf, but it actually just fell, and I could have stepped on it, but I'm not that way, and it was about meditating, and so I picked it up right then and there and literally started meditating. And so fast forward, election season's over, had gained much success, got the first Latina woman elected to the California State Assembly. She wrote legislation that saved the last bit of green space in LA Basin, and some other great results. So I then went backpacking overseas. I was an exchange student as a senior in high school down to Venezuela, but at the time of the end of the election season in 93, after the 92 elections, I went backpacking for 6 months overseas. And came back, went for my master's in public administration and public policy, focusing on the environmental protective kinds of policies. Got out with the master's. As I was graduating, I picked up my first energy medicine modality. And while I was going for my master's, I taught meditation at a local community center to adults. And so when I got out and was job placing, you know that feeling when you don't have doors opening for you and you feel like you're hitting a wall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I knew to read that as, okay, time to reevaluate. So I stepped back and I'm like, what are you trying to show me, universe, we could say?
Uh-huh.
And what I got was that the machinery within the economics globally for fossil fuels at that time in this is now 97 wasn't ready to give way. We were still way too entrenched with fossil fuel usage. So what I heard was, if you want to go for change, go at it one consciousness at a time. So I relied back on my bachelor's, which is in English literature, went into the classroom teaching English lit, and then alongside that, did energy medicine and holistic health and wellness sessions as a second revenue stream. Had a lot of fun. Also taught meditation to kids in the school, taught Qigong to kids in the school in an after-school club I formed with one of my male colleagues who wanted to help. A lot of the boys were starting to get diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, and so we wanted to help them. So we formed what we call the Stress Reduction Club, but I taught them meditation, I taught them Qigong, taught them some yogic breathing, because I had taken both yoga and in college, as well as eventually I would get certified to teach Qigong over in Asia. So fast forward 2.5 years, I'm in the classroom running the energy medicine and holistic health and wellness sessions alongside. And on a Saturday, I had my hands over a client at her belly, top and lower parts of her belly, and we were both really pleased. She was in like number 3 of like a 10 session package, and we were both really excited with the results we were getting. So I'm like, okay, so if this is going this well, what else can I know or do to get even more robust results for my clients? And right around that same time, Ray, I was balancing my checkbook. It could have been that very same Saturday, but it was within like a week, it feels like. And as I looked at my pre-digital banking days of balancing the checkbook, I wasn't pleased. And I had this feeling of like being in a cage for decades of my life. And I'm a free one and I need to be free. And I knew there was more abundance, more adventure, more fun to life than what I was experiencing. And so I did my usual ask like the universe, okay, so what else is possible here? And within a month's time, a colleague of mine introduced me to the international school system. I did what I had to do, submitted applications, flew to the place I needed to fly to, where all the heads of international schools from around the world came in and interviewed myself along with loads of other candidates all weekend long. Bunch of interviews. In the morning, I might interview with like Lebanon and Colombia and Costa Rica. In the afternoon, I might interview with different parts of mainland China, Taiwan, Israel, India. So ultimately, I took of the job offers one in Taiwan because I understood that that's the traditional Chinese system. And it's not even mainland. So they're even able to be more traditional. And so they also are where the seat of understanding how energy and consciousness works. And they still operate from that today. Whereas here in the West, alchemy went underground many centuries ago. And we have had, it's changing now, thankfully, in part due to this work I do, we have had a very resistant attitude towards anything other than what can be pointed to and proven as real. Whereas in the East, it's more understood that I was traveling in places that there were monks everywhere. Like in Thailand, I was in Bangkok and there were monks in robes with a cell phone and a cigarette waiting at the subway or the tram station. And, you know, in Taiwan, I'd go to the morning market to get my produce and there'd be monks there getting their produce, driving away on their scooters. So, I mean, they were everywhere and monasteries were everywhere and big, huge Buddha statues like 10 stories high, Guan Yin statues, 10 stories high. I used to gas up my scooter at a station that had like a monastery right behind it that I also used to run on the trails behind the monastery in nature. And there was like at least a 15-story foot high Guan Yin statue. So everywhere, not everywhere, but the majority of places you travel in Asia, that's just very brief examples, I was always reminded as an already meditator and already energy medicine practitioner, and already doing yoga, but not yet teaching it, I was reminded everywhere, like, our focus here is we know our power is inside. And more importantly, we know that there are practices to help engage with inner mind self-talk. So the work is within, go within. Whereas here in the West, it's almost the exact opposite with the external focus we have. Yep.
Yes.
So I was there for 10 years and studied deeply and came back after a time in India during Chinese New Year break in between semesters. I went to India, got my yoga teacher training certification, Another time I went and got in Thailand, got my Qigong teacher certification. But more importantly, frankly, I went around getting all these traditional treatments like Tuina, Chinese massage and reflexology and Thai massage and all sorts of stuff, and asking questions about like, okay, so how does this work? And how does that work? And learning about how energy flows and why it doesn't flow, and learning about how to work with the consciousness, each of our own consciousness. As I was teaching meditation in the classroom and teaching AP Psych in the classroom too. So there was a beautiful congruence that I was able to see with East meets West. And I came back to the States after 10 years, dropped the classroom teaching, and have taken this work full time because of the nature of the times we're in from 2012 to 2032.
Okay, that's quite a story, and if I understood you correctly, you specifically mentioned the year 1993 that I
heard.
Yes, and I, by coincidence, had a big spiritual event that happened to me that year, so must have been a big year.
Yeah, 92 is a big election season. A lot of change was ushered in from that election season in societally. It wasn't just dependent on politics. There was a fair amount of change in 92, and that 93 would be a good year, yeah. But we're in this time now, Ray, and listeners, I really want to help here, which is in great part why I do the work I do. I get a lot of joy out of helping people better understand why the times we're in is so challenging. So I got asked to do a radio show from Voice America for 2.5 years, a weekly show, and they approached me, and they asked me to do a show about December 21st, 2012, the Mayan Galactic Alignment. But I was doing nothing public-facing in my business or platform, yet they asked me anyway. I had been taking clients because I typically live in the west coast of Florida, so it's right across the Gulf of Mexico to the Yucatan Peninsula, where a lot of the Mayan ruins are that have already been excavated. But I wasn't advertising that, only word of mouth, clients knew that. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, I said, okay, to the person asking me, give me 48 hours, let me go inside, listen to my intuition and see. And so it was a full body yes. It was neon size, billboard size, neon letter, yes. I did it. I interviewed a bunch of experts. And what I came to understand was that, well, the Mayans were the ones that were really well known for December 21st, 2012, and that they worked with this geometry, this astronomy, and a sense of perspective that helped them understand every 26,000 years a new cycle begins.
Ah.
But Yogi Bhajan also said that of the yogic world. We just left one yuga, which means era, and have now entered a new era at that time.
Uh-huh.
And professional astrologers, we're just leaving the age of Pisces and going into the age of Aquarius. So the Mayans weren't the only ones to mark 2012 as an important point for vast change. And so from 2012 to 2032, we're going through my second book's subtitle is Easing Humanity's Evolutionary Transition, because my publisher knows I'm so focused on this work, because this is considered the most intense evolutionary leap and the biggest evolutionary leap humanity has ever made that we are aware of. So the first 10 years were challenging, and these next 10 years are more about constructing and building.
Well, you know, kind of disregarding that time period and what came out of the Mayan teachings, I think a lot of people today say, yeah, we recognize that something big is happening in the evolution of humanity, you know, and a lot of spiritual teachers, you know, specifically emphasize that a ascension or a big awakening is underway. And I agree, you know, I sense it, and I feel that a lot of the discontent and the great concern that so many people have about what in the world is happening in civilization today. The world seems to be falling apart, you know, and some teachers like Gene Houston and others, you know, say that we're at a tipping point, you know, that we have the ability to change to a big evolutionary leap, or to, if we don't step up to that task, to devolve and go the other way. So, yeah, give us more of your perspective on the changing world and, about living through that, this time period of change and evolution.
Yeah, it's a great question. I'd be happy to, because it's in great part why I continue to do this work. I came back with my first book written that started as my dissertation for my PhD, What If There's Nothing Wrong? And it was focused on holistic practices, comparing the East to the West, and really ended up tracing back where we left out holisticness. And I now, since that radio show, have been able to better frame my work, as opposed to only talking about the importance of paying attention to the invisible, and that over half of the rest of the world understands there's more power in the invisible than there is in the tangible, and helping bring that forward and the importance of working within. Now it's because of the nature of the times we're in. Like when COVID hit, Ray, I wasn't even, like people asked me to pontificate about COVID, and I usually responded with, I've been talking about this since 2011, since I had my radio show. I have to purge everything that's misaligned. And that's what we're seeing with the Me Too, the Black Lives Matter. And I typically, before these times, was seeing that people would turn in America, people would turn to the average person when they had a crisis, would turn to working with energy medicine. I mean, and I don't mean a lot of you listeners. I mean the average person. I'm sure some of you out there are even nodding. So that if they had a job, I saw a lot of this from 2010 to 2012 or 2010 to like 2014. People would have multiple crises. They'd lose a job, they'd divorce, and they'd lose someone they love to death, is an example. And I see that as spirit's way of breaking down the ego, which is the ego mind is what we call it in meditation, where our personality level self is attached to the thoughts we're thinking. And that's what we hear for our thoughts, is that level of ourselves. And so COVID happened, in my view, because we weren't having enough people recognize the need to go within. And I had tears that first time I did a public free offering of calming people down and helping give guidance about boosting the immune system, et cetera, because I was hurt for humanity's sake that not enough people were proactive enough to clear out the density within, because the earth is just, she's a reflection of what we feel inside. And so many of us have so much uncleared business when what I call the back of the house consciousness. So I spend all my time day in and day out clearing the unconscious and subconscious. My intuition has been nicknamed Hawkeyes to help people lighten. So if we're making everyday daily decisions, and hang in there with me, y'all. If it seems like I'm not giving a bullet list direct answers, I tend to teach in a more Asian style way and talk. It's circular, but it will all come together, I promise. So it seems like the scientific stats are about 15% of the thoughts that we hear, that's what we make. We don't make our daily choices from there. It's 85% of thoughts we don't hear. That's where we're making our daily choices from. I don't agree. From my 20 plus, I think it's like 27 years at this point in this field, human potential, I think it's more like 95%. So when we learn to drive, we say put the car in reverse, put foot on brake, put foot on gas. We don't do it once we've learned. It goes lodged into the subconscious. Trauma, we can't feel, so it goes lodged to the subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
Conditioning, imprints, karma, storylines, beliefs, unconscious beliefs. I'm talking about now both the subconscious and unconscious. So the thoughts we don't hear are what drive what choices we do and do not make on a daily basis. So we have, I would say, 95% of our consciousness we're not even hearing from. We're making choices as a result of, but we're not even consciously hearing. So my gig is to flush more of that back of the house consciousness up to the frontal lobe to use for more mindful choices. And so in these times, we're constructing towards a new, what as some have called golden era. And the more light we all have, the more lightness each of us are, the less density, the less old we're carrying around and projecting into our future, the more mindful and with more presence our current choices of what we're going to create tomorrow gets made. So the more mindfully we're consciously constructing our world together, because it has hit mass consciousness. Enough people know, hey, my thoughts have something to do with what I see in the outside world. I'm moving well beyond that by saying, by taking not only the responsibility, but by doing for yourself, and that your power is within your own hands. You're not a victim to anything outside of you. You do the work with your consciousness and you can get yourself freer and freer. And as more of us do that, we're going to be making more conscious, responsible choices. And then that will get us to the collective threshold. So I'm not a doomsday person, but I've had difficulty admitting that humanity isn't as well off as I had hoped. There are really some lazy ass people out there.
Yes. You know, just here's one question I have for you. One of the practices I've done over a lot of years is to send love and lightness and wholeness out into the world, and specifically to human beings, other human beings. Do you think that has any real effect?
I think that's an excellent question, first off. Second off, I love that you've done that. That's beautiful. Third off, from what I know about the mechanics of subtle energy, the more and more you clear out your back of the house consciousness and you have more light, that means you're a higher vibration. You have more life force or light. Let's use those interchangeably, flowing throughout your system. Then that means the more powerful your requests for light, love, and what was the third thing you said?
Wholeness.
Wholeness for humanity, the more powerful your prayers will be. Because the higher your vibration, the more you move energy. And so we're no longer living in that Newtonian physics-based world where everything's predictable. The apple will drop from the tree because of gravity. But now we're in a quantum physics-based backdrop, which everything can leap, and quantum leaps or quirks and sparks and jumps. And it's a lot more energy based. So our energy is more powerful to begin with. I mean, you can see people texting you after you were just thinking about them. We're much more interconnected now because of this energetic backdrop. But it also means the more we work with our own consciousness, then in the lighter we get, the more power we have even beyond the fundamental laws of energy, subtle energy and how it works.
Well, so I loved what you said back a few paragraphs. You said basically we need to shift from density to lightness. I love that because, if we think about that in terms of energy or in terms of consciousness or in terms of, goodness versus evil or negativity, it all has applicability or meaning. Yeah. So,
yeah.
And coming at it from an energy perspective is interesting. I want to mention something here. I'm looking at a picture from your website where you are basically, I would say, hugging a rock, but I can see that is a standing stone that's in a hinge somewhere. I presume it's in maybe in England or somewhere. Tell us about that, and then I want to shift more of the discussion into energy healing and energy work that we can do.
So I train people in the vibrational grid system that I developed from my two backgrounds, energy medicine and teaching meditation and yoga. And so I use the energy medicine to run clearings and activations on people, whether it's with my hands or it's verbally at a distance, remote or in person. And then I bring in what I call applied mindfulness coaching to help a person work with what's been released to create a new neurological pathway to have new patterns form, breaking the old patterns. So as I train folks in vibrational upgrade system, they meet me over in England.
Ah,
well done.
Uh-huh.
in Glastonbury, UK, which is known as the heart chakra of the planet. And I, that's the dragon master level. And I take them to bigger stone circles. And that one's in Avebury. So in part, what I'm doing is it's to help the earth. If I go to circulation centers, which many stone circles are, because they're on a grid, just like us, the earth has meridians, yeah, ley lines. And so if I'm taking higher vibratory people out to a stone circle, that's a distribution center across the ley lines, and we're doing specific processes that send more light out to the planet, we're helping the planet. And then that stone in particular, there's a couple of stones in that avenue that leads into many stone circles there at Avebury. Those have been measured with EMF measurements, and the hertz that comes off of them is known to create physical and mental and emotional well-being. Mm. So I take them to places that are healing power spots too.
So you really do serious work to help people tap into energy. Tell us more about that. I know you do work related to chakras. Do you believe that that's really very important a part of energy medicine?
I do. So you know those old interpretations, like if your knees are hurting, then that means metaphorically you're having difficulty walking forward or moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So those bodily metaphors, I didn't find those at all. They were sometimes helpful, but they were not consistent and reliable. If chakra means, and I had to put together sequences based on the chakras in my yoga teacher training in India, I had to have poses to open up each chakra. But every single pose is meant to open chakras. That's why we leave yoga class feeling so good. Yoga has those eight limbs, and only one of them is about the body postures. Five of them are about working with the mind and consciousness. So it comes from the yogic culture, and it means wheel from Sanskrit to English.
Right.
And it's meant to turn vital life force energy, or qi, as we say in traditional Chinese medicine, like qigong or tai chi, and qi, as we say in Reiki, or prana, as we say in yoga. So every chakra is an intersection of the mind, the body, and the spirit. And if I'm working with the body level of those three, then if you look at where the seven main chakras are, each one covers not only that area of the body and the musculature around there, but also every single major endocrine gland is covered by each of the seven main chakras. And then the chakra column itself runs along the spinal column.
Right.
So that's both our chemical and our electrical systems, our two main communication systems covered. And then if you go to, so that's the body part, mind and spirit. Spirit's how I can access karma, past life stuff, and mind of the mind, body, and spirit tiers that are covered at each chakra, because that's where mind, body, and spirit intersect at each chakra. The mind part is the consciousness, the subconscious, the unconscious, and the frontal lobe consciousness, the thoughts that we do here. So I'm able to get at every aspect of a human system from working through the chakra system, and it is the most reliable. I mean, I can see if a person has a certain pattern, like let's say it's a woman who doesn't speak up for herself easily. Now you would go automatically, well, it's involving speaking and speech and communication, that's throat chakra. It starts at the second chakra, which is every chakra has a right to it. And so the sacral chakra is the second, your right to feel the way you feel. So if a woman doesn't feel, and the men too, if a person doesn't feel like they have the right to feel the way they feel, then they're by no means going to express that. So there's very consistent patterns that correspond to specific chakras. And I don't mean that I go in and just do work on the chakra only. I go right at those patterns and what I know to be various aspects that lead to that pattern, both from experience, but also my intuition, because it could be different for you than the person who has lived a very similar life as you. Everybody's an individual. So by clearing out a person's past and a person's conclusions that the in storylines are living from today based on that past, whether it's trauma or it's imprints or it's conditioning, because the mind just likes to be predictable. If I'm getting at both those levels of consciousness through the chakra, I'm double timing my efforts because I'm getting them freer quicker, both in their mind as well as in their body's flow of the energy. So the more energy, or now let's say light, using light and chi interchangeably here in this example, it's not always the case, then the more light you have circulating through your system, the more the chakras are going to turn that vital life force energy, see I'm changing them again, that vital life force energy out through that area of the body to that endocrine gland, down the spinal column. So the more health you're going to have, the more vibrant you're going to be, and the more successful you're going to be, and the more elevated, the higher your vibration is going to be, and the more constructive and creative your choices are. So there's such multiplying effects by working through the chakra column, as well as it being a predictable roadmap to enlightenment, that, yeah, they're really important. And it's not about a five-minute video on YouTube with a sound healing crystal bowl clearing for the sacral chakra, and then you're done for your life. It's open and balanced and ready. And the biggest thing that I love working on with my more advanced people is once the chakras have been cleared, every lotus petal is an aspect of chakra.
Oh, wow.
So so there's a lot of complexity to the chakras. And so as each chakra opens and starts to turn more of that vital life force energy, there's a vortex out in front of each chakra as it's meant to be. And then as you have them all opened and flushing out the vital life force energy with the vortices in front of them, overall your field then becomes a whole lot stronger. And that strength of your field then communicates that much more powerfully with the Tao, or the greater field, the non-local field, or what I've come to call the field of unlimited possibilities, because of the nature of the times we're living in. The more easily you can work the law of attraction, the more easily you can command energy, the more easily you're heard from the universe to bring back to you what you're emanating out. So it's just great.
One of the spiritual teachers that I studied, worked with a bit, particularly on chakras, she talked about energy bodies as well as the energy centers. Do you do that? You know, and I guess you could say an energy body is something like a layer of the onion of energy around the body.
I don't address it that way because I feel like it's too technical. I am of the nature to, I'm not going to intellectualize any of this stuff. I'm going to apply it in a way that gets you freer, happier, lighter. So we have more light on the planet embodied by each individual. So overall, we uplift the planet and humanity. So I'm the big game here. That's why I went from helping with green legislatures and green legislation to getting this change by one consciousness at a time. So when we talk about the bodies, you get those, it's like what I was just saying, which is why you're asking the question from it. You emanate out and create your overall field from the more the chakras are emanating out the vortices, the healthier you are.
So we were talking about the energy aspects of this. And, you know, I noticed that you have said that energy medicine is a professional gig now. It's no longer about energy work, and necessarily, I assume by that you mean that it's not necessarily something vague, at least to people who are understanding it. It's there's more of a technology to it. Is that what you mean by that?
Yeah, I love that you picked up on that. It says a lot about you. And please excuse the clock making song in the background. You just cut the last note. When I lived in Asia, it's going again, there is definitely a science. I mean, the whole Ayurvedic tomb, the whole yogic tomb is an understanding of energy and consciousness, as is traditional Chinese medicine. And then even the philosophies behind the Taoist principles, they're all based on how universal laws that are talking about how energy, subtle energy works. So it's a science. And thinking of it as something casual, I'm going to give away this energy work. You want to come over and do some energy work, and how it gets grouped in with psychics and tarot reading in the West. It feels like it's been, and I'm going to say something that might seem a little bit of a leap, but there's a connection to the patriarchy having been in control in the West for centuries. So when women are, you know, we're more wired to be in touch with our intuition, although the masculine is definitely stepping up its game. There's some beautifully intuitive men out there now, and always have been, but the intuition has always been kind of associated with a woman when she speaks up and sees something, and then they get burned at the stake or hung or beheaded. And so it seems like in the West, for centuries, the idea of working with energy has been restricted to people on the outskirts of society who were not, who were basically, and even as holistic practices came into play more in the West, particularly in America, the gig was to call them, what was it, wackos, or there was a certain term that was used to try and discredit people who were talking about something outside of the mainstream system. And we're no longer in those times, thankfully. We've definitely moved through them, much so in the last 10 years. But the point is that there has been this connotation in the past, in the West, when somebody talks about working with energy, that it hasn't been taken seriously. And it is in the other half of the world, and not just the Eastern Hemisphere, but even in the Southern Hemisphere, like Africa and Latin America, they understand aspects of the invisible forces at play that in America in particular, but in the West, we have disregarded because it hasn't helped the capitalistic system, frankly, because it can't be measured and costed out the same way. So it's, to me, I'm all about, like, you know, there's schedule, there's a science to this, and it can be remote, it can be in person, and massive gains can be made so that you have more longevity, vibrancy, vitality, creativity, intuitiveness, well-being. And it seems almost like there's been a mission to separate us out from that innate well-being. So there's such a big picture overall to professionalizing the field of energy medicine and helping it get taken seriously alongside the stuff that has historically gotten taken seriously. I'm having a hard time getting this out. That's interesting. But it's a profession, and, like, you know, you show up in a timely way. You show up dressed professionally. It's not something you give away to your friends and family only. It's not something you give away for free. It's not something that, you know, you just go up to somebody in the supermarket and say, hey, I'm seeing this about you, because you want to show off your intuitive capacities. Like, there's standards, professional standards that I teach my students to hold themselves to. Wow. So that it can help get elevated more to a profession. And it is. I mean, there's the International Association of Reiki Professionals. There is now a couple of different associations for energy medicine practitioners, but professionalizing and elevating its way it's treated in its regard of importance.
Okay. So I want to see if before we wrap up here, because we're running out of time, I want to see if we can tie what you've been talking about, the development of energy medicine, to how people can apply knowledge about energy. You talk about opening up our systems to have a more finely attuned receptivity that pulls toward us more support, guidance, and power to create what it is we're desiring. So help us understand about a little bit more about how that works.
Okay, so, you know, the way we go at it in North America and the West is we power through, we have goals, we have strategies, and we, like, if you consider my story earlier about, like, okay, I had graduated and I was looking, how do I use my master's and going for job placement, and when I had the no doors opening with the kind of ease I was used to, I knew to read that. And you nodded right away before I was even done describing the scenario, knowing that same feeling. Reevaluate when doors are not opening easily. Whereas if we go at it from the more young perspective in our conditioning of power through, make it happen, we have five goals, we're going to stick to them, make it happen no matter what. All of that is force and pressure. And there's even aggression there. However, when we understand, like, my second book's title is Vibrational Upgrade, A Conspiracy for Your Bliss. I say that it's a conspiracy for your bliss because our third chakra, our solar plexus, for example, it has the aspect of what we manifest out onto the physical plane in life. It also has in it the aspect of joy. It also has in it the aspect of self-confidence. It also has in it the aspect of the inner child. So if we just take those four aspects together, what that implies is the more joyous we are about what we're manifesting out onto the physical plane, the better our solar plexus will be, which also means the more confident we'll be. Now, another aspect that's a major one is our machinery to pick up on how other people feel, or our empathicness machinery is in the solar plexus. Hmm. So if we're overly absorbing of other people's energy and overly focused on others instead of ourselves, I've seen solar plexus chakras malformed where they're folding in on themselves. So a person could be absorbing other people's energy more than they're tuned into their own center. So the heart chakra has in it the aspect of giving, and you can go out of balance and be excessive and overgive. And it has in it the aspect of receiving, and you can go out of balance, close down to receiving and not be receptive. So there's also the aspect of magnetism to the heart chakra. Hmm. So if I am in my sacral chakra feeling like I have the right to feel the way I feel, and then in my chakra right above it, the solar plexus, the third, I feel like I have the right to desire what I desire, which is the solar plexus's right. And in the fourth chakra, then therefore I have the right to love and be loved. So if all of these are building on top of one another and they're open, my heart chakra has the ability to emanate out these desires of mine because of the magnetism. And then if you couple the magnetism aspect with the receptivity aspect, I find myself tuning people's chakra column in a way like it's an instrument. So if I can get certain clearings done to open up their receptivity and to open up their heart chakra's aspect of magnetism, uh-huh. then our energy system helps us have what we desire reached more easily than striving, going for it, making it happen, pushing, forcing.
Yeah. It's a beautiful way that you're describing it. And, I've worked with some energy coaches and, and at various times I've worked more with chakras than I am right now. But I love how you were describing the aspects of it. The teachers that taught me were more focused. They talked a lot about the energy, but, it's very physical, I think, in many ways, and talking about the body and not necessarily integrating the mind and spirit aspects very well.
But those two create the body.
Yes. So I got you. Yes. So you're absolutely right. And what you were describing, that kind of coaching process, is beautiful.
Thank you, Ray.
It really, I think, helps give an understanding to what an energy coach can, and a holistic energy coach can do these days. So I'd love to learn more. Unfortunately, we're out of time. So, say a few words to wrap up with the listening audience and give them your web address, et cetera.
Okay, so if you want to learn more, I just want to, this is my final words. I want to have the connection seen between our thinking mind, thoughts we don't hear, and how our energy flows or doesn't flow. Because the consciousness is totally related to our energy.
Okay.
So if I believe that I am not deserving to have what I desire, that's going to close down my root chakra. It's going to, or I already have a blockage in my root chakra. So let me give a better example. If I think that I'm supposed to be seen and not heard, there is blockage in my throat chakra.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I cannot ever hear that thought consciously. Allison, you have the right to only be seen and not heard. Stop talking. But what will happen, here's an example from a client, is I will just label myself as shy. And I, in my work relationships, I won't speak up for myself. And in my personal relationships, my romantic relationships, I won't really express how I feel. I'll focus more on even being pretty because I'm supposed to be seen and not heard.
Mm.
but I won't hear the conscious thought conclusion of I'm supposed to be seen and not heard. I don't have the right to speak up for myself. That's bad. Instead, I'll just not do it and I'll stop myself. So when I get those cleared, that throat chakra opens more, and then I work with the active mindfulness to make the new choices, because the person can approach it now where they can see their conditioning, they can see their parents' imprints, they can see their past behavior having that exhibit that belief of, I guess I really thought I didn't have the right to be heard. So there's an absolute connection between clearing our consciousness, mostly at the sub and unconscious level, which are the thoughts we don't hear, to then having more energy flow.
I think I had never completely ever made that connection. I hear you saying that our energy health overall and our chakra health is very much tied to our subconscious, and so especially beliefs that are in that subconscious.
And the unconscious, because I can have unconscious. The word, you know how people talk about unconscious biases nowadays?
No.
It's the way more the mainstream is referring to unconscious conclusions, unconscious biases, where they realize like the feminine is deferred and the male is primary, like in the state of some recent conversations. So that shows an unconscious bias. So yes, it's unconscious and subconscious beliefs. You're absolutely on the mark with understanding that. In fact, the interrelationship, it cannot be separated between the health of our energy flowing throughout our chakras and our body and the beliefs we have, because our chakras are either open or closed dependent on the beliefs that we don't hear the thoughts of. So when we're meditating, we can observe our thinking mind, but that's only 5 to 15% of the actual thoughts going on.
Right.
We don't
hear
the majority of them. And it's those unheard, or what I call back of the house consciousness beliefs, that actually keep the chakras closed down, our energy not flowing, our lives stagnant.
All right. So I kind of interrupted you there. Go ahead and kind of finish what you have to say and give your website address.
So I guess one of the ways, a takeaway for all of you listeners and Ray too, is if you're going about your day, when you're going about your day-to-day life, not if, and you hear your mind have a belief, or you hear it have a conclusion like, no, I shouldn't do that because they're probably not going to respond well anyway, you could question it. Wait a minute, is that even true? So this is both in Western cognitive behavioral psychology therapy, as well as it's a very common practice used in Buddhism. When I went to monasteries in Asia, I was shocked at how many classrooms there were versus a one main meditation chanting room. I expected the exact opposite, but because there's so much talk about the behavior of the mind, they have that many classrooms. So talking back to your mind and starting to unravel it and living in the question rather than the conclusions that the mind has are two great ways to start opening up your status quo existence. So you can find me in a free Facebook group called Vibrational Upgrade. Vibrationalupgrade.com is my website. My name's Allison with one L, middle initial J, and then K-A-Y, last name, on Amazon. All four books, international number one bestsellers, are there. One of them's on Audible. People love that one. Reasonable Dragons is my book on Audible. And all of this will get you started. You could also go to, this is something that I'd love to offer, especially because of our conversation today. If you go to my website, vibrationalupgrade.com, you go to the Chakra Attunement audio series. On that page, every chakra's aspects, the major aspects, not all of them, are listed. And you can self-assess, and then underneath each chakra, there's a sample of clearings and activations, a couple of minutes long. So feel free to self-assess and then buy it, start listening to it. But don't listen to more than one chakra a day for the first month, because you'll fry yourself. These things really work. They really clear you out. And there's physical reactions, there's crying when you start clearing the heart chakra. So go slow when you buy the chakra clearing audio series and just listen to one a day. But just please get started on your internal life one way or the other.
Allison, thank you so much for this conversation today.
I found it
fascinating, and I'd love to keep it going. But
you asked great questions. You're a great interviewer. I really enjoyed it. Very atypical questions. Thank you.
So listening audience, take advantage of what she was just telling you there and check that out. Again, it's been a pleasure, Allison. I would love to continue this conversation another time, so maybe that might happen in the future.
Okay. Namaste.
Namaste, yes. Now then, I want to shift your thinking to the evolution of consciousness by reading portions of an article by spiritual teacher Craig Hamilton. The article is entitled, A New Moral Compass, Caring for Evolution Itself. And he begins with a question from someone saying, when I'm awake to what you call the evolutionary impulse, I find that I care deeply for many things, the environment, the awakening of humanity, social justice, animal rights, and so on. Would you say that this is, in a sense, what evolutionary morality looks like? And he answers, the set of values that you laid out, things like a care for the environment, animal welfare, even spiritual awakening, are native to a general worldview that's been defined as world-centric. This worldview isn't a spiritual awakening. It's more of a psychological or cultural level of development based on what we value. When our values become world-centric, we start to care about the whole world as opposed to something smaller, like our tribe or even our nation. We still care about these smaller entities, but our primary orientation is to the health of the whole planet and everything on it. Not everyone on the planet has reached this world-centric stage of development. In fact, most humans are still more ethnocentric and identified primarily with their family, their tribe, their race, or their nation. But there are a growing number of us who see ourselves as global citizens. We care about the entire web of life that we're part of. When we reach a world-centric level of perspective and values, being a decent, caring person means that we care about some combination of these issues. But just because we're awake to our role as a world citizen doesn't mean we're necessarily awake in a spiritual sense. There are plenty of good people at the world-centric level of development who aren't enlightened or even interested in spirituality. The shift that I'm pointing to when I'm talking about awakening to the impulse of evolution is something altogether different. When we awaken to the evolutionary impulse as ourself, we start to leave behind our personal perspective on things and begin to let in the truly transpersonal or universal dimension of consciousness that is evolution itself. We start to become conscious vessels for the evolutionary impulse to act through us. As the evolutionary self, we begin to care intensely about the evolution of consciousness. We start to become sensitive to consciousness itself, in ourselves and in the people around us. We start to become sensitive to this new dimension of our experience. What's happening at the level of consciousness? Another way of looking at this shift is that we're tuned in to just how awake are those we come into contact with. How lost in ego is everyone around us? Are they awake to something higher? How awake am I? How much am I still embedded in my ego and the habitual patterns of the past? To what degree am I awake to something larger? That kind of sensitivity to consciousness naturally gives birth to a particular kind of care. There's this overwhelming and immediate care for higher evolution. It's a care for the future evolution of consciousness, and that's something that only we can do. We become concerned about humanity waking up beyond ego. And I'm not talking about wanting to make humanity wake up so we can solve the many problems of the world, although it includes that. We're primarily interested in awakening for its own sake. It's as if God is trying to become manifest on earth, and we're focused on facilitating and supporting that manifestation in any way we can. There's a higher order principle at work that's trying to come into form, but it needs us to be able to do so. Of course, this kind of higher evolution would most likely give us the perspective to be able to solve most of our problems. But that's not why it's important. It's important because heaven is trying to come down to earth. It's important because divinity is trying to come into human form. It's important because love needs vessels. Love needs to be expressed so that it can become known. This evolutionary awakening then begins to infuse all aspects of who we are, and it adds a certain fire to our world-centric values. As we transcend ego, we start to live from a deeper center. We're going to be more committed, more passionate about everything. We're going to be more effective. We're going to be more willing to fight for all the things we believe in, to stand for them, to not compromise, and to push further out to the edge than ever before. To all of you, many blessings. Have a great day and a great life.
Hear all of our previously aired broadcasts of News for the Soul online at newsforthesoul.com. Now let's get back to the show.